It's March 19th, 2024, and welcome to episode 87 of the Baby Metal Podcast. We gather in the podcast Discord server now and again to discuss news and thoughts on the past and future projects of Baby Metal. We invite you to join us, whether you're a longtime fan or have only just arrived. I'm Paul, and I'm joined by Kevin.
Hey, welcome back.
And Maggie.
Hello, everyone.
All right, so the topic that we're going to talk about today is a show report from Kevin on Legend MM. And there's no news to report because, in fact, actually, no time has elapsed since the last recording and this recording. But we just talked for so long that we broke it into two episodes. Anyway, so we'll get started with Legend MM. I guess I can just I can throw it to Kevin and he can take it from here.
Yeah. It was a cold, windy weekend in Yokohama, Japan.
Ooh. Tell us more.
So Legend MM happened. Momo Metal's birthday.
Yay.
Pretty cool. Glad that they were able to do this for her as the newest member. You never know with those things. It's never a guarantee. So I think that's a good sign that they're pretty happy with their hire and are excited to encourage her and support her on her Baby Metal journey. So that's awesome. Love that.
Yes.
Yokohama Arena, of note. The last time they played there was right before Legend M in, gosh, what was that, 2019, I think?
Oh, yeah, that was the
Sun Also Rises, something like that.
Yeah, right. The debut of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Remember that? Quite interesting. That will come into play later, I think. Largely, the concerts were enjoyable, fun, the usual. I will say the first night, I left actually ambivalent, not disappointed. I was going to say ambivalent. I'm going to read through the set list here and maybe explain why. So we got Baby Metal Death, Megatsune, Dada Dance, Shanti Shanti Shanti, Akami Intro to Kagero, Maya, BMC, Syncopation, Monochrome, Matali, Give Me Chocolate, Doki Doki Morning, and then the false ending of The One before the encore. So I say ambivalent just because it felt a little weird going all the way back to basically, was it Legend Metal Galaxy? It was a Legend Metal Galaxy playlist, with the exception of the couple of the other one songs slapped in there. I don't want to say it felt like a reversion. It was nice to kind of see them again. But I don't know. Maybe this was just me. I just kind of moved on from that era, maybe in my brain, that it just didn't quite hit as different. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But interesting.
But I will say, looking at it objectively and not in my own, you know, how I felt about it afterwards, I thought it was, you know, a pretty cool nod to, you know, going back when they debuted all this stuff with the Avenger era and Metal Galaxy. You know, it was all stuff she started and debuted in, right?
That's true.
So that was like her first introduction as an Avenger was all of this music. So that is pretty cool.
And I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, and I'm hoping I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure she started out the forum, and they started out with Dada Dance.
Okay, yeah. So the chat tells us, Dragon Fury in particular tells us, that Riho's appearance later surprised him. So that means that Momoko must have been there at the beginning, since Dada Dance was the first non-future metal song.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there we go.
Yay!
So, awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I was thinking about the set list, and this sort of continues throughout, but I mean, it was still kind of diverse. Like, some things did come back that we hadn't seen for a while.
Yes.
So, you know, Syncopation may have been seen somewhat more recently, but
they played it in the UK in the middle of their tour.
Yeah.
I think, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They brought it out at the two London shows for sure.
I don't know if that was the last time they played it, but that's just the last time I remember them playing it. So it hadn't been in their back pocket too terribly long.
Mm-hmm. But Dada Dance, I mean, and Shanti Shanti Shanti, I think both of those.
Yeah. That's been a hot minute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kagero as well. I think since the last world tour, that would have been what, 2023, 2022?
The last the last world tour was 2019.
The Meta Galaxy World Tour.
Yeah, that was 2019.
Yeah. Where time goes.
I know.
Yeah, there was that weird skip there in the middle of time.
Yeah, it was a whole pause skip where nobody left the house. Okay, anyways, yeah. I don't know why. It was the first time I kind of left a concert, not like super amped and jacked. I mean, we're going to get to the part that I thought was the highlight here in a moment. But yeah, those songs just didn't really land for me anymore. I'm not sure why. I don't have an explanation. They're still good. They're still fun. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so they'd finished with the first fake ending, right?
That's where we left off. So I do want to mention, before we go into the encore here, for the first time, I actually managed to win Chomosh or Super Mosh in Japan.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Good on you.
Yeah, so if, thanks, Koba. good dice roll. So what that means is, you know, rather than being stuck in a pit 40 miles away in another prefecture, I was actually right next to the stage. I ended up with a pretty darn good number too. It was double digits. I think it was in the 90s out of several hundred, which meant I was in the second row right in the middle of the stage. If you haven't seen a picture of what the building looked like, very similar actually to Metal Galaxy, but rather than the roving stage that kind of went back from the back of the tee there where the band is, it wasn't on wheels. They just had a runway kind of coming out, you know, a third of the way into the arena where they had their octagon that could then go up and down. Mm-hmm. So I was right in front of that octagon stage in the second row, basically touching the barrier. And, you know, being a Western 6'3 guy, I was basically on the barrier because there was nobody around me that was going to be taller than me. So I had a pretty good view. That was pretty cool. I will say being able to experience that for the first time was super different than the other experiences I've had at these shows in Japan, where you're just kind of stuck in the corner, forgotten with all of the other foreigners moshing away because you can't see anything because you're as far away as physically possible for the venue you're in.
I bet we'll be able to see you pretty well then, I bet, on these Ultimate Blu-rays when they come out.
Yeah, you know, maybe. There was, you know, a ton of camera coverage, of course, as there usually is. And there was two crane cams kind of sweeping over and in front of us. I didn't happen to notice if I was in line of sight anywhere at any time. But yeah, we'll see. The difference is, you know, when it happened for Dada Dance at Legend Metal Galaxy, the cameraman literally, it was a handheld camera, leaned over the rail, found me, and shoved the camera in my face. It was impossible to miss that I was on camera.
It was fun, though.
It was fun. So yeah, had a pretty good view. So the one ends. Yay. Our little wristbands. We had got the special gift. If you haven't seen a photo of it, it's just a bracelet, a clear bracelet. The backside says Legend MM Baby Metal, and the dates Yokohama Arena. And at the front is a I don't know, about a 2-inch in diameter puck with three LEDs in it. It's capable of multiple colors. I think it's the first time they've used one of these where they could actually change the color of it. Usually when they've done this in the past, they were either like white or red, and that was it. And they hadn't really done two colors since, I think, Tokyo Dome. So that was kind of cool that we could see that this thing was capable of doing more stuff. I will say, though, after the Legend M, like, really nice vacuum molded gauntlet bracer thing, this thing felt super cheap.
Yeah.
It is super cheap.
I agree. I was just like, wait, really? When I saw the pictures of, because I was like, why isn't anybody talking about this? And then I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
They put more money into the lights and the inside.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I can't think these things are expensive to make. I will say that it's more practical to wear. That's kind of nice. But it would have been cool to have, I don't know, another piece of armor. You know, if you're a person who was able to also go to Legend S and you had the face mask and the like cape poncho thing, you know, you'd have that, the mask, the
necklace,
bracers from Legend M. If you went to Tokyo Dome, you'd have the head, the neck brace. So I don't know. Another piece of armor would have been cool to fill it out. I don't know. Pauldrons.
That would have been awkward to mosh. That would have been really awkward.
But you know what I mean. This thing was a little disappointingly cheap because they set the bar pretty high for these special gifts in the past. So yeah, the one ends. We get some lore. We get a lore drop. Lights go down. And I think for the first time, we got a pretty good. I was actually a little emotional after all of this. We'll go ahead and play it for you here, and then we'll talk about it.
It was the moment when another new legend was born among the many existing legends. Ago, a streak of meteors shone in the twilight zone, where the western sky was changing from orange to pink. Eventually, the meteors shifted from west to east and landed on this land, where a new messiah was born. No matter how many hardships she faced, she was like the sun, always shining a bright light. And tonight, just like in the legends of many messiahs, her black hair was splendidly disheveled, and the 100 flower petals that bloomed wildly were destined to disappear forever. The time has come to engrave in our hearts the last bravery of those 20 knights that will never come back.
All right. So now I tried to transcribe it best I could, so I'll go ahead and read it and just take it with a little bit of a grain of salt because it was really hard to kind of hear, and I definitely didn't remember it after enough to write the whole thing down from memory, so bear with me here. It was the moment when another new legend was born among the many existing legends. 20 years ago, a streak of meteors shone in the twilight zone where the western sky was changing from orange to pink. Eventually, the meteors shifted from west to east and landed on this land where a new messiah was born. No matter how many hardships she faced, she was like the sun, always shining a bright light. And tonight, just like in the legends, in many messiahs, her black hair was splendidly disheveled. And the 100 flower petals that bloomed were destined to disappear forever. The time has come to engrave in our hearts those last 20 nights that will never come again.
Pretty cool.
And then immediately following the lore, the very familiar headbanger intro, synth organ starts playing.
Mm-hmm. And of course, everybody who went there like knew, or at least expected, that this was going to happen, like in some form.
Yes.
Yeah. So the whole narration was accompanied by, you know, some pretty great artwork of Momoko, of the things being described in the lore. It was a really cool moment. Like, they went hard for this in a way that I really didn't expect after the last couple of legend shows we got. Like, they wrote her a story. They wrote her a backstory. How cool is that?
Mm-hmm. That is pretty cool.
So we got the lore drop. And then, it's actually kind of funny. We were, before the show had even started, we were just, standing there looking around, and I'm looking up and taking in the stage and things like that. And I noticed above the octagon that's right in front of me there, the second stage, you can see all the lighting trusses, that are obviously meant to light the octagon and do, all the cool lighting effects and things like that. But in the middle was a white circle that looked like a just kind of a big flat, ceiling light. And then surrounding that was what kind of looked like the same design as on the wristband. So we several of us spent the beginning of the show trying to figure out what the heck this thing was. I figured it was just some sort of cool down light because, like you mentioned, we all kind of expected this, you know, headbanger moment to happen. So, okay, cool. Maybe they're going to do some cool, super bright down light in the middle for her. Somebody had actually called what this ended up being, which was really surprising. Mm-hmm. So the transition between the one and the beginning of the lore was unusually long. Turns out it was unusually long because Momoko had to get from the stage into the ceiling, through the rafters, into this thing we were speculating on, because it turned out to be an elevator. So the lore ends, the headbanger organ starts playing, orchestra, background, all this cool stuff, and here comes Momoko descending from the ceiling while this is happening, with the biggest smug face I have ever seen, with all of our wristbands lighting up and everybody cheering and going crazy. Here she comes descending from the ceiling into the middle of the stage right in front of me.
Pink lights everywhere.
That was a pretty spectacular moment.
Yeah, that's pretty. I've seen video of it. Looking forward to the sort of official camera work of it, mm-hmm. but it looked quite amazing.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be one you're going to want to check out when the official video releases. It's really cool. Like, I was stunned at how all out they went for her. And I'll be honest, it was a little bit emotional. Her lore just, I think, kind of references the journey she took to get here, right? Which I thought it was really touching. And then, of course, the moment we've all been waiting for happens. Headbanger starts. And, of course, you know what's going to happen. You know, we get to the midway point of the song. Everybody's down on their knees bowing. And, of course, there's two little bows from Moa and Momoko. And then suddenly, of course, Momoko rises slowly, looking Sue in the eye as Sue hands over the microphone to Momoko. And she takes her place in the center to commemorate her last night of being 20 years old to take lead vocals for the rest of the song, which was also a pretty big surprise. So I've heard Momoko sing before. She's got a pretty good mm-hmm. voice. I wouldn't say she's one of the strongest vocalists that SG ever produced, but she's got game. She's pretty good. What I heard from her was shocking in the most surprising way. This girl can growl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She did her own thing. So Yui had done this before. When she turned 15 in France, right, there's like a minute of video of that. She just sang the song. Mm-hmm. Sue obviously just sang the song. Moa just sang the song. Momoko made it her own. Mm-hmm. I was like, you go. This is incredible. So, yeah, she dropped the back of her throat, started growling like, she was Alyssa. What's her name? Alyssa White.
Glues.
White Glues.
Yes. And damn, that hit. And
yeah,
in really, I don't know, true baby metal fashion, she didn't growl the whole thing. She switched to like this super cutesy voice that contrasted with her growling in a way that tickled the same nerve as like the first time I heard Doki Doki Morning back in the day. Like, mm-hmm. it was just this complete 180 in tone that was shocking technically, because holy crap, Momoko has range I never gave her credit for. And second of all, like, this is new. We haven't heard a version of this song like this before. How cool is this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cooler in a different way than like the remixes from the Metalverse remixes are of like when they did Karate with the DJ Kami. A different version of the song, but this was a lot closer, right? So it was just her making Hit Her Own, and that was just cool. That was awesome. I cannot wait for a recording of that. I need to hear it again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Yeah, and I definitely want to hear it.
I need it fed into my veins.
I was wondering, so you had mentioned, and I think I remember seeing this, but Maggie mentioned that they were pink lights everywhere, and the poster's all pink. And that's one thing that struck me, is that I think, you know, like we, for the most part, had been up until now stuck with red, blue, white. We kind of started getting yellow maybe in metalism and stuff, and, you know, shanty, shanty, shanty to a certain extent. But are things going to be pink now? I mean, it does sort of seem like it's we've added a color to the palette now.
I think it'd be cool.
I do want to say I don't remember my wristband lighting up pink on night one. I'm pretty sure that was a night two exclusive. Steven, if you're still here, do you remember?
Steven does remember and calls you a fake fan. He said it was pink first night.
Well, remember, if you were up front, you probably had a lot of the lights coming in, like
it was over my head,
close to you. Yeah, and it probably distorted a bit. The lighting probably distorted a bit for you.
So there was a photo posted in our live chat that was part of, I think it was like a Natalie.mu review of the concert. It's a pro shot photo of this moment, and that is 100% night two, because the caption says it's from night two Metataro.
Okay, yeah.
So,
okay.
Maybe.
we'll go with maybe, and we'll wait until the video comes out, and then you can tell us I told you so
later. I want to say, I want to say the pink was night two only, because it was so shocking and nobody was talking about pink after the first night. Whereas it was very hotly talked about after the concert on Sunday.
Interesting. Okay. So I thought I had just kind of like observed something new, but apparently everybody else observed that same new thing. Excellent.
Like the color palette of the lore video and the artwork was not just like red and black. It was peach color. Mm-hmm. There was orange, yellow, pink, in the artwork playing on the screen.
I see.
Ooh. Okay. That's always good.
Hang on. I found a fan cam of her dropping out of the ceiling.
Actually, one other sort of trivia bit while we're pausing is Riho was there on the first night, at least.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Perhaps she both, was.
But not avenging, just watching.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. She
that's
did.
Pretty cool.
Okay. I don't see any pink as she's descending from the heavens here. I'm right. I'm going to say I'm right.
He wasn't.
Pink was a second night exclusive.
Okie dokie.
Okay.
I think it was blue.
Fair enough.
I think it was blue. It's hard to tell from the video, but I think pink would have registered on the camera better in this fan cam. Mm-hmm. Okay, wait, hang on. I think I do see pink, but it wasn't when we think it was. So the very famous photo that was attached to the article that got posted, and I was like, no way, that's the second night for sure. That is true. That is while she's descending, and that makes sense because we're going to talk about the lore. When she starts singing in the song, there are pink lights.
Yay! Pink lights.
After she growls, all of the wristbands turn pink. But it doesn't last.
I think it was really short. So
in my defense, at this point, we're all just going insane and nobody's looking at the wristbands. So
I mean, no, who would? No. I don't blame you.
Unless you were in a seat way in the back. If you were in a pit, odds are you had no idea that your wristband turned pink. Okay.
Fair.
We have a definitive answer. All right. So anyways, that was Headbanger. It was cool. Go Momoko. I think it's worth maybe speculating for a little bit. What do you think about knowing that this girl can growl? What do you think that means for the future of the artistic direction of this band?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we actually had sort of like a little internal discussion about this, mm-hmm. I think, as well. And I don't know what I think. I mean, like I like the sort of like the growl that we have in the, you know, original album and stuff like that, you know, the sort of like background occasional growl. I don't think I would be particularly interested in any growling any more farther forward mm-hmm. than that. I mean, like, you know, distortion is yeah. about my limit. Mm-hmm. And, but I mean, you know, if it turned out that Momoko could do that, you know, just sort of like the scream and dance version of growling, that might be interesting. But I think I would gain a song I would skip often. I think if there were any sort of like song that was growling front.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. It's not, it really isn't for everybody. Like, there's, that's why there's like 50 million different genres of metal. Like, it's not all like, you know, all the time. There's, you got your speed metal and all that stuff. But, my quick thought is that they would need to, if they are going to utilize her, they would need to utilize it in a way that wouldn't overpower Moa being there. That's like in, you know, Metally, they have her doing her thing of, you know, Metally, Metally. And then during the live show, she says, "Are you ready?" You know, that's cool. And not part of the original recording. But to have it like something hard set in a recording, they would have to really work. I think they would have to work at it. It would be cool to hear. Don't get me wrong. I would be happy to hear that. But knowing the, you know, triangular setup of the system, it would be awkward if they didn't do it a certain way. So it would have to come up with some creativity. But I'd be for it.
I bet they could balance it. I mean, like, so they probably could set it up in such a way that Moa does something different but still independent. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. It's just, so, like I said, coming growling, up with doing whatever it may be.
Guitar part.
I don't, that yeah. would be kind yeah, of
I
neat.
Don't, I don't doubt their creativity to make something like that work. I do think it's a cool thing to mm-hmm. have in their back pocket. I'm kind of with you, Paul. I don't think I would listen to a whole song of that. But in the vein of distortion, I think that would be pretty cool. To have that mm-hmm. in-house, mm-hmm. as it were. Mm-hmm. It would make for some fun stage moments, too, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Though, I mean, I guess once you get to the question of doing it live, then, you know, they as a group should be very careful that she's trying.
Oh, sure.
You know, so she doesn't wind up hurting herself.
You know, put live in big old giant quotes, right? I think they're...
Yeah.
You never know. Like most of Moa and Momoko's and Yui's parts were pre-recorded and they were lip syncing, right?
For the most
because
part,
of the
yeah.
dancing. So,
and I mean, we're already well aware about Metally too. Like we know that's pre-recorded, yeah. but still cool that it was even recorded that she did that, yeah. you know, but we know mm-hmm. during the shows it's pre-recorded.
But you're right, Paul. That is terrible for your throat. So if they do end up doing stuff like that live, I'm sure they will take care of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, Headbanger happened. It was cool. It was awesome. And then they ended the show with Road to Resistance and we all went home. Well, we all went to the bar.
I was going to say, what? Excuse me? There's no way. I know you guys too well.
It's a family-friendly show, Maggie.
Oh, I mean, yes, technically.
We all went home like... good little kitsunes and rested up for the next day.
Mm-hmm. You went to Fox God and Rockaholic. Don't tell me you didn't.
I was like, I didn't. Anyway. That's pretty far.
Fair. It's like an hour. I was going to say, I'm not really even sure. I guess, yeah, because Yokohama's towards the more southern part of Tokyo, and I think...
what's in it?
Rockaholic
Yokohama's
and...
in a different prefecture. It's 50 minutes away. It's not close.
Okay, anyway. Onward to night 21.
All right. So, yeah. Sunday happens. We get up. I don't have Chomash today. I have a regular pit ticket. But that's okay. I got to be close for Headbanger. So, they're just going to do it again on 21 night, right? Of course. So, I already got to see it close. And I'll just happily, you know... bow and run around in circles during Headbanger on 21 night. So I'm cool with, you know, being in the back and moshing and doing all that kind of stuff. Worth noting, these shows were very obviously labeled 20th night and 21st night. the 21st night, March 3rd, is actually Momoko's birthday. She turned 21 years old. So headbanger on Saturday. Pretty cool way to end your last 12 hours or so of your 20th birthday, your 20th year on the planet in front of, you know, 15,000 screaming fans. Pretty spectacular birthday, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So night two, a little bit different of a vibe, some different music. I do want to talk about the little pit I ended up in. So I mentioned in a previous episode when we talked about Pia Arena, how they put all the foreigners in this tiny little box of a pit as far away as you can go. You know, it felt like a mid-sized master bedroom in a house in America. That's about how this one was even smaller on Sunday. I wasn't in the foreigner pit, but it was a skinny little rectangle of a thing. It was very difficult to mosh and do all of those things in because of its shape and lack of depth. So while I was all the way in the back, it was only one pit further removed from where I was the night previously. It was a logistical challenge. I do want to give a shout out to everybody in this pit, though, because they went hard. This was one of the most fun pits I've ever been in. And I think that's saying something. I knew this was going to be a good one when we're standing around waiting for the show to start. And in Koba's pre-show playlist, he has Kingslayer, and the whole pit moshed Kingslayer before the show even started. So I knew this was going to be a good one.
That's fantastic.
So we moshed Kingslayer. Funnily enough, they cut the song off midway to start the concert. So we didn't get to finish moshing Kingslayer, but that's okay. We were going to start the concert. So let's get right into it. Baby Metal Death again. Distortion. Papaya, which was a notable exclusion from the first night. That might be the first time they haven't played Papaya at a concert since it came out. Mm-hmm. Kind of crazy to think about that. If I'm not right on that, it's only been a handful of times where they hadn't played it at a concert. And I will say that was notable and talked about after night one. It's like, they didn't play Papaya. That's weird. It felt weird.
What am I doing with this towel?
Literally, we were all like, well, I have my towel, I guess. It was nice to wipe the sweat away, I suppose. To use the towel for things that towels were, I suppose, manufactured to be used for.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyways, Papaya Night 2, Elevator Girl. Hey, we're hitting all of the Metal Galaxy stuff.
That has not been played anytime recently at all. Right?
No.
I mean, that's nice to see that back.
I want Legend Metal Galaxy, I think. Legend Metal Galaxy, I think, was the last time.
Yeah, that was the last time.
That was actually kind of cool to see. Some people, I think that's a little controversial of a track. I think it goes pretty good. I think it's fun.
I think
it's lyrically interesting and different. I don't know. I dig it. I dig the
I'm not much for, I'm not much for the English version, but yeah, I do like the Japanese version.
I don't dig the English version, but the Japanese version goes. And not to knock on the English version, I just don't think it translates well.
No, it doesn't. I don't think either.
It doesn't hit the same. So anyways, after Elevator Girl, we get a very instantly recognizable beat that we haven't heard in a little while. And it's the beat they play when they're going to lead their solos into Yava. Bump, 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 bump. Yeah, it's a 2-1 clap. Instantly knew what was coming after the solos, so that was pretty hype. Haven't done this one in a little bit.
And the previous time they played that, you know, with a Kami intro, I mean, that, I think, is pretty much universally thought of as the best.
Yeah.
Version. I think so.
Yeah. That was Big Fox Festival.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's the same intro they played for Big Fox Festival. So yeah, super cool we got to see that. Yava ends. Everybody's super hyped. We go into some of the other one tracks, Believing. Then we get Brand New Day. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen that one live in a little while. Starlight. Karate. Metali with another Kami intro. I got to say, this was the first time I'd heard Metali in Japan. Holy crap, does that song hit different in that country? That crowd goes absolutely bananas during that song. It is fun.
It's great.
Fun in a way that you just have to experience for yourself sometimes. Like, it was fun on the US tour. It was cool. But really, once you get past the first one, maybe 2.5 rows of people at a Western Bay Metal show, crowd's mostly just kind of standing there bopping with a little bit of pit happening. No, every person in the building was going hard for this song. It was really cool. Much in the same way Papaya goes. Like, Papaya kind of goes worldwide like that. This song goes like that in Japan. It was really fun. After that, Gimme Chocolate. Doki Doki Morning again. And then once again, we got The One as a soft ending. All right. Encore time. It's going to be Headbanger again, right? At least that's what we thought. Oh man. No way. So we got a completely different lore video. With more backstory, you know, whereas Night One kind of referred to Momoko's journey, this one was very kind of, I don't know, birth focused, if that makes sense. I don't know. This was, it's bizarre in the best way. We'll play it for you here.
A long, long time ago. On March 3rd, Metal Village is bustling with people for Hinomatsuri, the Girls' Festival. There was a huge peach that stood out among the cute Hinata eared decorations.
Kokosho! Kokosho!
When boys and girls of Metal Village worked together to lift a huge peach, a big metal baby was born from inside. Metal Hollow born from peach. Goes on a journey to exterminate demons with two metal heroes.
No.
All right. So once again, this is transcribed, so I'm going to do my best. It was hard to hear in the fan cam because of crowd noise and things like that, but I think we got about 80-85% of it. A long, long time ago, on March 3rd, Metal Village is bustling for Hinamatsuri, the girls' festival. There was a huge peach that stood out among the cute decorations. Dokoi sho, dokoi sho. When boys and girls of the Metal Village worked together to lift the huge peach, a big metal baby was born from inside that goes on a journey to exterminate demons with two metal heroes. That's a little bit paraphrased. I know really we missed cool. some stuff in that.
Yeah.
So I really can't wait to hear the official version. But yeah, reactions to that? How cool is that?
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, one thing that, I mean, so this relies hard, I think, on essentially sort of like SG era Momoko, right? But one of the things that I was wondering about, I've never been really solid on what the connection is between Momoko and Peach. So is that have something to do with her name, or is it actually something that she did in the
word for Peach in Japanese is Momo.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. So that does explain that connection.
Yes. She does not share a kanji with it, but is pronounced Momo. And I want to say we manifested that, the peach thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's pretty well known that they do a pretty good job of knowing what's going on social media, even if they don't
right.
lean into it or interact at all. Like, what are the odds that we manifested this ever since she joined this group as Peach Metal? Because everybody immediately started leaning into the peaches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anytime there's a question of, like, which Avenger would show up, you know, it would be indicated by a peach, you know, or whatever it is for Riho, a dagger.
I want to say we manifested it. We probably didn't, but it's fun to think about.
Yeah.
At any rate, we get this super adorable peach lore with this Momoko backstory of how she was born from a peach at this cute little village somewhere. And then here she comes. descending from the heavens again. This time for sure in a sea of pink, because as soon as that elevator started moving, the whole building was pink. Which was awesome. If you're familiar with the history of this group, pink and pink accessories have been kind of banned for a really long time. So it was fun to see a splash of color that we thought was not allowed.
That's true. Oh, yeah, that's actually. Right. I guess it's
the SG flags.
Exactly.
That's exactly. True.
That was my first thought. I was like, can I get my flag out now? Is that cool? are we doing this? So anyways, yeah, here she comes. She's descending to some cool, cute orchestral music thing that I would do disservice to by trying to describe. So you're just going to have to watch the video when it comes out. However, we don't get Headbanger. She starts singing. And when I say she, I mean Momo Metal, Metataro.
That's wild. That's been a long time since we've heard that. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing that she started it. Because, I mean, Yue and Mawa each had their own, more significant parts in that song than in many other songs.
Yeah.
But it was still, just a line.
She sang the entire intro, the part that used to be split between Mawa and Yue up until where Sue comes in. She sang that whole part. It was awesome. So then we got Metataro with Pink, and we hadn't seen this song in I can't remember when. The first one that comes to mind is Tokyo Dome. I know that's not right.
No, but it was.
It feels like it's.
There was a discussion like about this. Mm-hmm. Dark Knight Carnival was the last time it was.
Yeah, so that was still like 300 years ago in 2018.
Yes.
So yeah, super cool moment. And it was cool that they got to do two. I won a free drink because I had bet somebody that they wouldn't do Headbanger twice because she turns 21 on night two, and that would be weird.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I won a strong zero from a friend.
Nice.
That was pretty great. And then they wrapped the show with Arcadia. Not to end on a downer, but that is not my favorite way to end a show. If I do say so myself. So it kind of was like peaked, and then we pulled back a little bit and it was over, in my opinion.
I think Arcadia, so the feeling Arcadia always has, though, is kind of like, like pushing off to the, the next thing.
Into the sunset. Like
it's heading into the future.
Yeah. So we had a discussion about this afterwards, mm-hmm. and I totally agree with you. As the musical theater event that is a Baby Metal concert, it totally makes sense. I love the message of it. It works. It works for the message they're sending and the lore and all of that stuff. Totally get it. Just not my personal favorite way to end a show.
Mm-hmm. It does not give much opportunity for participation. It's just like,
yeah, exactly.
Go. See ya.
That's really kind of it. And when you have things like Rotor Resistance and IDZ in your back pocket that, I don't know, just they feel like the natural conclusion to a live event. In a uniquely Baby Metal way, ending with Arcadia just doesn't really hit for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the message. It's cool.
Yeah.
That was Legend MM. We got Momo Banger and we got Metataro of all things. How cool is that?
Yeah. Sounds great. And I think we have, now I've forgotten when it is, but I think Wawa has already told us when they're going to stream these two shows, show these two nights.
The WOWOW distribution broadcast schedule is 20th night comes out on March 30th, which here next couple weeks, and then 21 night comes out on April 27th. So actually quite soon.
Yeah, that's what I do remember that they were like a month apart. But once WOWOW shows them, then they're probably mostly done,
mm-hmm.
So it probably will be right around then that we start being able to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are not able to buy them yet, right?
No. There's been no announcements of that yet.
That may well be a Fox Day thing.
Going to be a little while. It'll be interesting to see what they exclude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I am definitely looking forward to seeing this. I mean, I think the set list is varied enough that it does hit a lot of, this would be a pretty decent show set to show someone.
Yeah, I will say, I mentioned the first night didn't really land for me as a set list. for unknown reasons. The second night totally did, but it was the same kind of mix of stuff from Metal Galaxy, right? So I don't know. It was more, maybe it's more interactive. Maybe that's what it was. The second night felt more interactive, whereas the first night there was a lot of songs where you just kind of stand there.
I do sort of feel like the second night has a little bit more rarities in a sense. I guess I say that, and then I'm looking at Dada Dance. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I think I'm right. At least for me, I think it was the interactivity piece that was missing. There was a lot of standing around on night one. A lot of songs where, you know, there isn't a circle pit or there isn't some sort of, you know, crowd participation thing other than just like putting your hands up and cheering or whatever. Whereas on night two, like almost every song had a thing you do.
They did announce the delayed live viewing that they do at the
movie theaters and stuff. I mean, those, yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, those are happening, and I think those are happening in about a month. So yeah, that was Legend MM in a nutshell. Super fun. Glad I went. Metataro, man. Like, never thought I would see that one again. You know, we've had this discussion before. Whenever something resurfaces from the depths of the playlist, what does that mean going forward? Are there more things that we could see that we haven't seen in a really long time? What does that mean for like maybe a Black Baby Metal track in the future coming back? You know, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Possibly reinterpreted.
Possibly.
They generally don't reinterpret anything, but I mean, who knows? I mean, that's something they haven't done before. Yeah.
I think
they like to do things they haven't done before.
I think for me, the only song that's off limits would be song four. And then really the only thing I don't see them bringing back would be Onidare Daisakusen.
Yeah. Right. I think Sisanger almost has no representation at all in live performances. I mean, like Tokyo Dome, and I think that may be it.
Yeah, Tokyo Dome was pretty much it. Because they only, as far as when they were touring, they only played Sisanger over on the European tour portion. They didn't do it at all. They did GJ on the US portion of the tour. Only reason I know that is because it made me very sad, because Sisanger is my favorite of all of the Black Baby Metal songs. And I was thoroughly disappointed once I found out that Europe got Sisanger. So I was like, well.
Yeah, I always... I mean, you know, generally speaking, when someone asks, what's your favorite baby metal song? I say the one that is playing right now. but Sisanger does not quite that, you know, for some reason, that one has always been not right there at the top.
Yeah.
Somehow for me. But I know other people, you know, even, you know, recording this podcast right now, disagree with that. But
yes. it caught on to me very, very quickly when the album came out. I was like, okay, this is getting on repeat many, 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 many times. Now, not as much for the choreography for it, but that's a whole another discussion. But the song and the singing in itself, I love. Anyway.
All right. So I think we've made it through our Legend MM show report.
Yay!
So our plan for... Yes. We hope soon to talk about travel tips to Japan. That's a upcoming topic we will tease.
Mm-hmm.
So probably next time you hear us, we will be talking about considerations in traveling to Japan, for example, to see a baby metal show.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I would say with the goal given our audience to see a baby metal show.
Yes,
right.
I mean, considering the fact that every single time that I've been to Japan, that has been the reason why I was there.
Right. Yeah. So that's it for this episode. You can join us on the Baby Metal Podcast Discord to continue the conversation. Rating the podcast on whatever platform you listen on will help people find it, so please do that. And until next time, see you.
See you.